Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 15th of March, recording at 9:18 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick look at the week in terms of some highlights. In stock markets, well, it's a mixed performance overall, starting with Asia. The strengths have really been Japan and the ASEAN markets. Well, the greatest strengths, I should say. And if I take Asia-Pacific, Australia also has been firm. Had a good day here today as well, up 1.75%. Now, Japan, well, let's go carry on with the review here. Now, on to the European stock markets. And, well, they're not doing badly overall, given all the fear that's been associated with Europe. And we have, though, right now, a little bit of potentially negative divergence as far as the next few months are concerned. And I mentioned this before, and that is that while the SX 50, the 50 major corporations in Europe, is that index is actually quite firm up near its highs. But the European banks index is softer, and it's not experiencing a rout by any means, but it needs to rally back in line with the broader indices. Whereas if banks, as a general rule of thumb with stock markets, if the banking sector is doing at least as well as the broader index, then I'm reasonably relaxed during a rally phase. If banks are outperforming the broader index, I think the situation is really quite bullish. On the other hand, when banks start to underperform, the caution signs ought to be flashing a little bit, and that's exactly what's happening here in Europe overall. Now, bank indices are still pretty steady in the Americas, albeit off very, very low levels. And Wall Street's been a relative strength standout here for quite some time. And we have seen a number of indices, broader indices, move up to new all-time high ground. We can thank quantitative easing and the Fed for that. I should say Mr. Ben Bernanke. We can also thank the energy advantage that the United States actually has, which is really considerable. And my feeling is that we will see the S&P actually take out its all-time high as well, join the other indices, in other words. And I think it was transports that had broken to new all-time high ground first. And these are important moves, and more on that a little later on. Now, the Dow did break its 10 consecutive days streak to the upside, but it only had a small decline in here today, down 25 points. Long-dated government bond prices, they have edged a little higher. It's been quiet stuff, though, but they've edged a little higher here on the week, meaning that the yields edged a little lower. That's not surprising, since bonds were a bit oversold in the short term, although certainly not in the longer term, but more on that a little later on. And the slight firming that we've seen in the bond market, government bond market futures, is really in line with a realization that stock markets are a little bit overcooked here, following their excellent gains since the middle of November. Now, in currencies, it's interesting that the dollar was overbought and had seen quite a strong rally And that continued with that for the first 3 days of this week, but has come back a bit sharply here in the last couple of days. So it looks like we're seeing a loss of upside momentum here for the US dollar. And some of its Western country currencies, or some of the Western country currencies that we've seen, the euro, for instance, has pushed back above the 130 level to 130.76 against the greenback. Sterling has also bounced back above the 150 level. It's currently 151.14. And looking further afield, the Australian dollar, that's back up to just above 104 now. So a little bit of softening by the US currency. And that may well continue. But overall, it's in terms of a little bit further pullback, but overall, it's range bound. Precious metals, they've been mostly steady in here, but it depends very much on what we're comparing them with. And you know my view, I believe, on gold, that it's really hard money. It's always been hard money. It's worth comparing gold to the various different currencies to see how it's doing overall. And no surprise in saying that gold is strong against weak currencies such as the Japanese yen, but it has been underperforming in US dollars for a number of months, but it's not doing too badly in here. It's finding support at the lower side of its broad range, and it's closed out here today just below the $1,592 level. In terms of crude oil and many other commodities, well, let's take the crude oil here. We've got the WTI crude. It's picked up a little bit here. It's at 93.45, so it has been steadier here this week, and as has the Brent crude has also edged up a bit. Industrial metals have been soft for another week. They had they had some sharp declines in here today. They had been a little steadier a couple of days in the week, but before coming back down here today. And grains and beans. Well, the interesting news is that we had a sharp decline in rough rice. That's good news in terms of, particularly in terms of Asia's food costs. And soybeans are quiet here, and we've seen all of these staple grains come down, but particularly rough rice and soybeans, less so on corn. The really important story here for the medium term, as in the rest of the year, is that we do need to see good crops now in the United States, Canada, and also the European countries. Now, will we actually see that? Well, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful in the sense that we've had pretty turbulent weather conditions and often hostile weather conditions for several years. So statistically, we're due for a little bit better result. There is some concern over the fact that global temperature is on average a little teeny bit higher, and that is more likely than not to lead to more rain. And that wouldn't be such a bad thing. But we need the important point is, and I don't know what the weather is going to be like for the rest of the year, but the important point is that we need, as I said before, good crops in the United States, Canada, and also in Europe here, just to enable countries to build up reserves, and keep your fingers crossed on that one. I think it's an overdue possibility that will happen, and that would be good news in terms of inflationary pressures. And okay, that's pretty much it in terms of highlight developments, and let's talk about now the outlook for these markets. Within Asia, I mentioned that Japan, I think, really is the most interesting story because of these dramatic measures that the Shinzo Abe government is actually taking to try to end Japan's deflation. Can they do it? Well, certainly, I think they can if they're aggressive enough. And they will need to be aggressive. That would mean a further weakening of the yen. And I think it will at least go above the 100 yen to the US dollar. And currently, yen's a little bit firmer in here today, but it's at 95.28. So I would have thought we'll see at least another 5 yen to the upside here. So that's the dollar strengthening against the yen, and a soft yen is essential, I think, and a somewhat softer yen is essential to support this Japanese economic recovery and hopefully the end of the deflationary pressures that we're seeing. And as you know, they've got a 2% inflation target now in Japan, and the new central bank is fully in place and in a strong position to implement those policies, and the government is currently quite popular, so it's moving rapidly as it should do. So that's quite interesting. China, I'll be very interested to see what happens next week once Xi Jinping formally takes over. He's been formally adopted as president, and the conference long conference has concluded. So the new administration will be, as I say, fully in charge come Monday. And China has pulled back, as you are aware, I'm sure, over the last month or more. And that's really been due to concerns about some central bank tightening, because the central bank's been concerned about inflationary pressures, particularly in terms of rent. And the government itself is concerned about speculation in China's property market. And the government wants to be stimulative, but it's not easy if the central bank is giving warnings on inflation. And also, the government is concerned about, and needs to be concerned about, everybody's concerned about the pollution problems in China. So they have to address those. The medium to longer term solution for China's economy is to move more from a almost entirely export-dominated economy to a building within China, building all these vast cities and infrastructure. Well, they need to now develop more of a consumer-based economic momentum, and they will. And this transition is inevitable. But it is also likely to be a little bit choppy, and the uncertainty is reflected in the pullback to the moving averages, or they're still above the Shanghai index, still above the its 200-day moving average. But my feeling is that it would be good to see it find support around current levels continue a consolidation in this current range between the highs that we had seen earlier in the year, the rally highs earlier in the year, and the lows just below current levels. Now, that would be holding over two-thirds of the or more of the gains that were experienced during that good year-end rally. And if China can do that, then the outlook for medium-term gains would be quite attractive. On the other hand, if the problems I mentioned a few minutes ago weigh or on sentiment and also policy, then we could see China slip back a little bit further and get much more of a longer ranging period over the medium term. So it'll be interesting to see if we get a positive response on Monday, and by that I mean a good upward dynamic on the first official day for the new government. We'll see. Now, in elsewhere, the ASEAN markets have been absolutely outstanding, but they are also overbought. And there's some loss of momentum that's evident. We've seen that within Malaysia. We've seen a slowing of upward momentum in the Philippines. Thailand is currently, and also in Indonesia, Thailand is still pushing higher, but these are sufficiently overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages that pullbacks in the next within the next few months are quite likely, and consolidations. But I don't want to create anxiety in this broadcast. I'm not just trying to be nice, but I should emphasize the point that so far the technical action has been very consistent with a bull market. And not a bull market ending. We don't have any of the signs of that. We don't have all the high fives and back slapping and popping champagne corks and irrational exuberance and people bragging about their equity portfolios. There's very little of that, for sure. And valuations, while they are no longer cheap, they are not at the overbought levels that we've seen at previous important market peaks. So I think this is consistent with a bull market cycle overall, and that we will see inevitably some markets pull back further, such as we've seen in Europe and Brazil. The commodity producers, with the exception of Australia, have tended to pull back a little bit more. And whereas Wall Street, with its energy advantage, has been the U.S. reflecting the U.S. economy's energy advantage, has been considerably firmer here overall. So, as I say, it looks like a normal, so-called healthy correction overall. But we're not finished with it, and we've only seen this starting in since the beginning of February, and we're going to be in this, I think, overall reaction, consolidation, and corrective phase for probably for a few more months. And if it continues as we've seen so far, that will be good news overall here for these stock markets. Now, in terms of stock markets generally, I'm really quite hopeful here in terms of the medium to longer term. And I wrote a piece, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, talking about the gradually moving out of this valuation contraction cycle that we've been in really since 1999, a little bit earlier, for the blue chip stocks. And I've been Owen and I have been consistently saying that we did not expect another big downward move similar to what we saw in 2000 and what we saw in 2008. Our view all along was that those two big bear markets within just a short space of years, I often put it in question form, did it make it more or less likely that we would see a significant another big significant bear market? Now the crowd, as you know, has or I should say perhaps some of many of the high profile financial pundits have been talking markets considerably lower for quite some time, although they've gone a little bit some more silent recently. But our view is that we are near the latter stages of this valuation contraction, which began back, as I think I'd mentioned, in 1999. And one of the reasons that we are near the end is that first, that we've seen a lot of valuation contraction. That's important. And also that the tail risks, Europe being the biggest of those tail risks, these seem more manageable today than they did a few months ago, let alone a year or two ago. So it's a favorable overall environment, and last but not least, the most important factor overall is the strong tailwind in terms of monetary policy. Now we can thank Ben Bernanke for that, and I think we can also see that, I know we can also see that a number of other leading central banks have taken up the same policies. I mean, the UK had all along, the ECB a little bit more belatedly, and Japan even more belatedly. But this is a very favorable environment in terms of the medium term for equities overall. I'll make a guess now that if we are seeing the end of the valuation contraction cycle, what I would expect Wall Street and a number of other markets to do is to break above their historic highs. That's virtually already happened. A lot of leading indices have done that, and then just go into what would be a fairly lengthy ranging consolidation phase. In other words, I wouldn't be surprised, for instance, if we take the S&P, if it didn't push through to a new high by, say, 3 to 5%, possibly in the relatively near term, and then just range sideways for a lengthy period of time. That at least is what happened really towards the end of the previous valuation contraction cycle, and we saw that type of action. It was choppy action, but no big downside bungee jump type of moves in the early 1980s. And that ranging phase was followed by what turned out to be the super cycle bull market. And this has happened before. We had a lengthy valuation contraction cycle from the late 1960s into 1982, then the big secular bull market. And you can go back earlier throughout market history, and you see this happening on a number of occasions. And so I think that's what's taking place right now. And we should see on a 30-year basis, and I hope to be around throughout that period, we should see considerably higher stock markets. Well, now, how will that actually take place? And I think there are a number of factors which I have mentioned before, and I'll run through these very quickly, but these are themes that we'll be covering throughout in Fuller Money. I think one is the accelerated rate of technological innovation. That's a hugely bullish factor that I've mentioned on a number of occasions. It is particularly bullish for corporations. Also, corporations, in addition to the valuation contraction, corporations got their balance sheets largely in order, and they are doing exceptionally well in this environment. And the biggest mistake a lot of pundits have made, they've been saying, oh, we don't like Europe, or we don't like the US economy, the government's dysfunctional. All true. And the growth rate is slow in this new normal environment. Well, the growth rate in corporations has really been pretty good, because these are the dividend aristocrats and the autonomies, particularly the autonomies, that have been doing so well in the expanding global economy. And parts of that expanding global economy are, of course, much stronger in terms of their GDP growth than the Western economies. So, against that background, Owen and I favor these portfolios of autonomies, and I think these companies are going to become stronger and stronger over the next few decades. I also think there will be a need to keep interest rates reasonably low for at least a few more years, but there are risks. Inevitably, there are risks to the upside in with interest rates, and that will become a headwind for stock markets as it occurs. But in secular bull markets, and I'm saying that we are likely to see the beginning of a secular, the next long-term, really long-term secular bull market, we're likely to see that. I think we're already seeing signs that we're heading towards that secular bull market. And we should have very clear evidence of it, I would hope, in within 5 years' time. Those events will be punctuated by some medium-term bearish phases. For instance, consider the last secular bull market beginning in 1982, and we did very well up until 1987 when we had the stock market crash. But you look at the long-term charts today, and that just looks like what it actually turned out to be, a very sudden and dramatic, terrifying statistical anomaly. But it did no lasting economic damage, and markets recovered over the medium term and resumed their move to the upside. So, market progress is never linear for very long, but weigh it all up. I think we have a more attractive environment ahead of us than people have been experiencing over the last dozen years or more. Now, what about these government bonds? And there's a load of money parked in the government bond markets, as you know. And I think it's simple. These government bond markets of what, 31, 32 years, they're over. And we're in the topping out phase. Markets haven't come collapsing back down. In other words, yields haven't pushed up dramatically because of all the quantitative easing that's going on, and because of all the fear, whether it's fear of Europe, fear over dysfunctional governments, fear of China, whatever, the fear of Japan. This has kept a lot of money in those government bond markets. And then also, we know how confident to over and overconfident investors in those markets have been, because they've just had a wonderful run for over 3 decades. But all of these cycles end, and there's not a whole lot lower that you can go in terms of these interest rates, is there? So, and I think also the hope on the part of some of those people within those long-dated government bond markets was that the rest of the Western economies in particular would see a Japan-type situation where they would have a disinflationary, deflationary environment for a good many more years. And all this quantitative easing that we're seeing, of course, is really being generated by central banks with the intention of avoiding that type of disinflationary and deflationary cycle. So I think my own view is that the longer-term risks will be more inflationary rather than deflationary or disinflationary, but hopefully not too inflationary throughout that cycle because of factors such as global competition and the efficiencies created by the technological innovation supercycle. Now, but in terms of these long-dated government bonds, I don't think there's much more money to be made there. I think the risks the medium to longer-term risks considerably outweigh the potential in those markets, and therefore I would give them a miss. I think equities are the asset class for now and also for the next few decades, except when they get too overextended and then see bigger reactions. We're a bit overextended here in the short term, so that's my caution over the next few months, but I remain very bullish over the next few years. What about commodity markets? And let's take gold in particular. And I think the biggest, well, there have been two factors at play in here. One has been stale bull liquidation as equity markets have improved. And that's also led to some short positions, as I mentioned on a number of occasions. And that's created oversold conditions, which may well lead to a steadier tone overall. But we've lost the trend consistency that we had previously over the previous decade or more. And that makes it a little bit more difficult environment to actually work in. I think the clearest conclusion one can make is that we've seen the best of the precious metal cycle now. And it may not be over, but I think it's unlikely that precious metals will be outperforming the better performing global stock markets. I think it's unlikely that precious metals will be outperforming most stock markets. Equities get the vote, and as interest rates go up, that will be an increasingly strong headwind for the precious metal cycle overall. And in terms of currency plays, I've already mentioned the yen. I expect a weaker yen. Is the dollar actually bottoming out? If you look at it on long-term charts, if you look at DXY, that's the US dollar index, mostly against the European currencies, but probably is my answer on that question. And but I would expect, with all the QE that's going on and the low interest rates, I don't think that the United States or any other country will want to see its currency appreciate too much in this environment. But the U.S. economy has this big advantage in terms of its energy costs, thanks to its development of the shale oil and gas. And other countries, if they make the right political decisions in terms of developing their own resources can catch up, but they're not going to do that for a few years yet, at least. And on that note, let me just say all the very best to all of you. Have a great weekend.